Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today, our panel of mental health experts discuss the holidays, which can be a joyous time. It also can be extremely stressful. Joining us, psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz. Good morning.
Good morning.
Social worker Jenny Putnam. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And hopefully we've got Mark Wheely joining us momentarily. As we mentioned, this is a joyous time for some. Others, this time of year can be depressing and stressful. I pulled up a poll by the American Psychological Association that says nearly 9 in 10 or 89% of those polled say that concerns such as not having enough money, missing loved ones, and anticipating family conflicts cause them stress at this time of year. And 43% said that the stress of the holidays interferes with their ability to enjoy them. 36% said the holidays feel like a competition. Right. I mean, for some of you can see where that would be. Right. Yeah. The commercialism, like when we look around, like, you know, you got all the ads and, you know, I guess it's that psychology between advertising. Right. You want to have a nice, happy holiday. You got to buy this and that and everything else under the sun. What for you, Jenny, is this do you feel the competition at this time of year or not?
Yeah, no, of course I do. I mean, I think it's impossible not to feel it, but in the past few years, what I've started to try and do is shift away from some of that with a couple of things. One is I try to remember that after Christmas is over, it doesn't matter anymore. Mm-hmm. People very rarely even remember what they got from you, right? So I try to think about, how am I going to feel immediately after Christmas?
Yeah.
Am I going to feel like, why did I spend all that money? Or am I going to feel like, oh, yay, I got the perfect gifts? And usually it's the latter.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I've been doing is following on YouTube people who thrift presents, hand make presents, do smaller holiday things. And that has really, because then that's my feed and it feels like that's the community I'm now part of. That also reduces my stress.
You know, that you just made me have a little flashback. My brother and his family would come at New Year's and we'd do like a second Christmas and we would always have this kind of theme. And one year I made that the theme. You have to do a handmade. And they were not happy with that. They're like, yeah, you can do that. So it was actually more stressful for them.
Right.
You have to find what's right for you. Yeah.
So I would say it could be handmade or it could be an experience, right?
Yeah, an experience.
I think that, you know, and we've been reading and learning about how to cultivate joy for this episode. Mm-hmm. And one of them is through connection to other people. And so, for example, we were down in New York for a week, a couple of weeks over Thanksgiving. And what we did was take out my niece and her wife for dinner and a play. And it was the best Christmas present I could have given them.
Yeah.
It was so great. And I don't know them and their taste well enough to actually, it's so stressful every year trying to think of what to get for them.
Right.
This was perfect. Time spent.
Time spent.
Laughs had. Yeah. Perfect.
All right, Jonathan, tell us about your faith growing up. You celebrated both Hanukkah and Christmas?
Yeah, and it's actually even I feel embarrassed for myself and my family when I think about it, but I will reveal the history. So I grew up in New Bedford, and two doors away were my best friend and my sister's best friend, who were brother and sister, the Durant family, Roman Catholics, a large family, five kids, big house. 14-foot high Christmas tree, and Franny Durant, their mom, you know, really did up Christmas. I mean, the entire room in which the Christmas tree was placed, you know, was just loaded with just all kinds of presents. I mean, it just, so this was the 50s, right? A game didn't cost $150 the way it does now. Mm. And of course, there was no such thing as a video game or any such thing. But anyway, this house was always just full of presents. And I think my mother must have just felt bad for my sister and me. So growing up, we actually had Christmas in the sense of receiving gifts on Christmas morning. We even had stockings with our names on it, which again is even sort of more embarrassing. And then we got to celebrate Hanukkah as well. Yeah. So it was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't.
A lot of I hear a lot of Jewish families that do that. I don't think you should be embarrassed. Yeah. I think I hear that a lot.
Right. It's too late. I'm 74. I'm embarrassed for
that. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Feel what you feel, baby.
And I think in the commercialism of the holiday also is impacting Hanukkah, right? Isn't it supposed to be like over the 8 days, eight small gifts, and now it's, you know, a lot of families feeling the pressure to get like the bigger gifts because then the kids go to school and their Christian classmates are talking about, yeah, I got the, you know, Santa brought me the Xbox, right?
I don't know. It is true that this year, for the first time in recent memory, Hanukkah, the first night of Hanukkah falls on the day of Christmas.
Right.
And so, you know, people are kind of noting that. But I mean, you know, our children are now, you know, into their 20s and beyond. So we don't, not really probably in touch with the youngest of children in the community. Yeah. But I don't know that... you know, it's interesting. I've heard kids and adults over the decades I've heard frequent conversations. Let's compare 8 days of Hanukkah and all the different gifts you can get in 8 days to getting one massive load of gifts on a single day. Mm-hmm. And I think that the jury's still out on which is considered to be a better way to go.
I think maybe what you did, but having Christmas and Hanukkah, that's the better way to go. Mark, what are your thoughts on the whole commercialism of the season?
It's strong. And certainly when I was growing up, I was a victim of it. I'm an only child from a mixed marriage, a couple. My father was a Christian and my mother was Jewish. Now, in Jewish tradition, the mother being Jewish means that the children, the issue, are Jewish by birth. But I was always also Jewish by her domination of the family. And I was much closer to her family than I was to my father's family. So I identified as Jewish, but I was probably the only Jew in the area that I lived. I don't know of any others. It was a particular island in New Jersey off of Atlantic City. Naturally, I did what the community did. I went out singing Christmas carols every year, even though I was off tune. But I really liked it. I really looked forward to it. As far as celebration goes, I was lucky in that one of my uncles on my mother's side was a toy salesman. Mm. And that was quite an advantage. He would give me some of his samples. I don't know what the stories were, but I got nice toys. It was a joyous time, and everybody in school was certainly celebrating it. So I fell right into that. As I got older, I did go to Sunday school and learned about Judaism, but I was not bar mitzvahed. My mother had a antipathy to learning Hebrew. She spoke Yiddish, but not Hebrew.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, in the times, all the, you know, craziness that's happening in the news. We just went through an election and I've shared this story with you guys, but I want to share this. I normally decorate the second Thanksgiving is over. I'm bringing out the Christmas stuff. And this year, it was right after the election. I was driving home after dark, and one of the houses in my neighborhood had, all the lights. It was really lit up. And I was like, it made me smile. I was like, oh, that's so great. Well, I went home and said to my husband, who normally is like absolutely against putting anything up before Thanksgiving, right? I said, you know, people need a little joy. And so he said, fine, go ahead. But I noticed there seemed to be a lot of people who decorated early this year. So I think people are on the same. We got to have some, you know, and I mean, who doesn't like to look at all the lights, you know, that people decorate around town, right?
Right. I mean, I think the thing to remember for me anyway, I mean, this may not be true of everybody. Obviously, people are all different. But to me, it's a celebration of lights, right? I mean, Christmas is when it is and Hanukkah is when it is. Because human beings have always celebrated some sort of light festival in the darkest months. And so we have to try to hold on to, whether it's because you're Christian and you believe in the birth of Christ, or you're Jewish and you believe that the, you know, candles stayed lit, or you're like me and you just think it's sort of this beautiful pagan tradition, to really enjoy the singing and the light and the companionship. Mm-hmm. To me, that's the way to go.
Right.
Yeah. But it's hard. It's hard not to. I've said to my family over and over, you know, my nieces are adults. My sister, obviously, we're in our 60s. Let's not do gifts anymore. They cannot. They cannot not do gifts. Yeah. They can't do it.
Yeah. It's
hard so to, yeah. That remains, but I'm still advocating for a different kind of Christmas.
Right. So
holiday season.
Before we talk about maybe like ways of bringing joy into the season, let's talk about some of the reasons that people find this so difficult. And as I mentioned, even in that survey, it was not having enough money, missing loved ones, anticipating family conflict. And this is a tough time of year for those who are living alone and for those who are still grieving the loss of a loved one. And I think, there's always so much going on, but it can be really hard when you're feeling that kind of grief to go out and, you know, be joyous and celebrate, as you say, you know, listening to the carols or looking at the lights. What are your thoughts on how we help those who might be feeling that way in this season?
Well, it all has to do with really the common denominator is where your attention goes. And if your attention goes to pain, you're going to feel it. Or painful things. So if you can just be mindful of that and not judge yourself for it and not say that, oh, you're deficient or defective because you're not into the spirit. That's not the case. You've had some pain and it's there. So you want to simply accept that, accept the sadness that goes with it, and realize you're still alive, which is the miracle, the biggest miracle of all. Engage in gratitude, engage in serving others at this time, engage in remembrance. Listening to old songs, old music, old movies that are meaningful for you.
Yeah.
And just take a deep breath.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you're grieving, grieve. Mm-hmm. If you lose a Christmas, you lose a Christmas. Grief is an important part of life.
Yeah.
And you need to honor it.
Yeah.
Right.
And for those who may be wanting to help a loved one through something like that, I guess to be patient, right? I mean, everybody grieves differently. And, you know, I just think I'm trying to think of like, you know, come on, mom, let's go. Let's do that. Maybe mom isn't ready to go. Right. So maybe we need to be a little more patient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Be with them where they are. I mean, this is like the social worker anthem is meet people where they are. But that's really like the kindest thing you could do for someone is to meet them where they are. So if they're grieving, let them grieve. Mm-hmm. Don't try to abort their grieving. This is someone who is very, very important to them.
You know, meeting somebody.
If it goes on for years and years, you need to come up with some different strategies. But
yeah. Well, meeting somebody.
Discussion.
Let me just amplify what you're saying, Jenny. Meeting somebody where they are is quite a gift. And it's relatively rare, say, in a 24-hour day, that you have an experience where somebody has met you where you are. That's what's so special about the work we do, actually, because we make a conscious effort to meet people where they are and not get in the way of where they are. Mm-hmm. I used to call it not getting in their sunshine, getting in the way of their sunshine.
I'm having a really hard time hearing you. I don't know if other people are.
Oh, I could hear.
Okay.
Maybe turn up a little bit, Mark. I would love to hear from listeners this morning on how they're bringing, you know, the simple ways they're bringing joy into the season. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about the holiday season, which is joyous for some and stressful for others. With us is psychiatrist Mark Whaley, psychiatrist Jonathan Swartz, and social worker Jenny Putnam. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We should talk about, we're talking about how we bring joy into the season. And Mark, maybe talk about, joy isn't material things, right? Joy is a state of mind. So maybe we need to talk about what joy is. But spreading joy is a state of mind, not a gift, as in material gift. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not a result of something specific. It can be, but it basically is not, because it's different from happiness. Happiness is can come from external things, and most often it does, but joy is a very deep emotional experience, and the reason is that the parts of the brain that get active when somebody experiences joy have a lot to do with the body and homeostasis and deep mechanisms of control or management that the body has. I won't go into the names and all that stuff, but it's different than happiness. There's some overlap, but quite different. And it's a really a deep emotional feeling of meaning and presence. I still remember an experience of joy I had when I was a kid. It was Christmas, actually. It was, I think it may have even been Christmas Eve or at least a day or two before. And it was a cold but clear, still, no wind, winter night. And I just went out on the back porch and looked up at the moon, which was quite vivid, as were some stars. And I'm thinking, geez, this is amazing. This really feels good. This really, I don't know if I felt meaningful or something, but it was a different state of mind.
Yeah, a little moment of joy. Yeah, Amy's asking Mark for you to put your mic a little closer to your mouth if you could. So I guess another thing we should think about here is, like, you shouldn't feel bad about not feeling as joyous as others, right? I mean, there are some people who just love this season, right? And they just go all out and they are just as happy as can be. And others who are like, oh boy, here we go. And you know what I mean? They're a little more dread and the stress of it all. So don't feel bad if you're one of those people who just don't find it all that joyous, right?
Sure. No, you are yourself. And that's where you experience the joy in yourself. It's not something that's an outside of yourself moment. Because there's it's a feeling of connection certainly with other people, but it's not because of other people necessarily.
Right.
Well, you know, you hear a lot these days and read a lot about the importance of being one's authentic self. These are terms that you never heard, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, certainly. And so there's a tension, I think, a natural tension between the drive to be authentic, which is certainly worthy, and the competitive nature of society in which we live, and all the different ways in which we are encouraged to compare our lot to those of around us. You know, you were talking, Mindy, about kids going to school and talking about what they got for Christmas, and other kids feeling, you know, less than or bad because they maybe didn't get the video game that their friend got. I mean, and of course, social media does nothing but pour gasoline on this fire of competitiveness, et cetera, et cetera. So there's this tension between, you know, what we as therapists or friends, I guess, might say, that is the importance of just being who you are and being the best version of yourself, right? That's another expression that we hear a lot about. In contrast to how easy it is to feel competitive and to compare oneself and what you have and where you are, et cetera, to those around you.
Right. It's like, it goes back to just kind of the gratitude part, right? When you think about, you know, it's like, well, you know, I don't have as big a house as so-and-so. I can't buy as many, but take a step back and look at what you do have, right? I mean, you have more than a lot of other people. I mean, most of us who live in this country, we have a lot compared to some of these other countries, right? We have roofs over our head, we have food on the table, or most of us. But there's always things that we can have gratitude for that might put that a little more perspective. And I'm just thinking, you know, there's something that's like everything has to be perfect, right? I got to have the perfect gift, have the perfect dinner, and if anything goes wrong, you know, it's who's going to remember that you burned the turkey, right? Nobody's going to remember that. Yeah.
It's about the connection. I mean, I think that there's the competitive piece for sure, but there's also the connection piece where you feel left out if your friends are excited about something mm-hmm. and you're not excited about it. Yeah. And
I'm sorry. No, I apologize. I was going to say that I went to the funeral of a former patient of mine. Obviously she's a former patient or I wouldn't be going to her funeral, right? But anyway, you know how people give you these little cards with a person's picture on it, usually on one side, and then perhaps a saying that they consider to be poignant on the other side. And I have this one in my bathroom. It's actually kind of jammed into the side of my medicine cabinet, and I see it every day, this expression. I think it's actually from Maya Angelou. It says, people will forget what you did and they'll forget what you said, but they'll never forget how you made them feel.
Mm.
And I think about that all the time,
right?
Because it's so true.
Right.
It's so true. Yeah. And whenever I'm feeling bad because, you know, somebody I know has got a nicer car than me, or they went on this fabulous trip or whatever, I'm very good at being able to remind myself that there's always going to be people who have more than me, and there's always going to be people who have less than me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm very fortunate to have what I have. Right. And it's very easy to think about really how lucky I have been. Right. And I certainly encourage people to do that. I do want to make the point that this, you know, this focus on gratitude is really worthwhile. And so many people that I've worked with and spoken with over the years have found that journaling mm. gratitude is really helpful to them. And it's a really simple thing to do. I mean, you sit down with a piece of paper or a pad or a diary of some kind and just literally just start writing about all of what you feel grateful for. You know, most of us shouldn't find it that difficult to be able to articulate what we feel grateful for. And that actually, you know, actually provokes feelings of contentment, satisfaction, joy, happiness. I'm not sure what the right word is, but it's certainly very therapeutic.
I would think that would be great, too, on the days when you're not feeling so good, to go back to your journal and go, oh, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. All these things that you wrote down. I kind of feel like when we're talking about spreading joy, it kind of goes back to the experience, I guess, Jenny, that you were talking about. I think I told you the story before on the air. I remember one of the Christmases that in my mind, you know, we all went to my grandmother's house and I got this new Barbie for Christmas that I was very excited about. Well, none of the adults except one, my Uncle Ray, was at all interested in talking about my Barbie. But that particular experience of having that conversation with him, and I remember in the moment being so happy that here was an adult willing to talk to me about my Barbie. Oh. He was the only one.
That was the better gift,
It was a joyful moment, right?
Yeah. I didn't really get toys. I mean, I don't know. For whatever reason, we didn't get really toys or games or that kind of thing for Christmas. But I remember Christmases, and I remember going to school and other kids getting whole new wardrobes or, you know, a ski trip somewhere, and we didn't do any of that. Doesn't matter. I remember Christmases being so joyful,
right?
Because we were all together, we were all happy, we had these traditions that we worked our way through, which we still do. I've still never spent a Christmas away from my parents, mm-hmm. you know, and it just brings us all joy to do these things. You know, we have donuts mm-hmm. every Christmas morning. Donuts, like, they're disgusting. They're the worst thing. I love them on Christmas morning.
Oh, that's so funny. As kids, we always got a tangerine or clementine in our stockings. My mother thought, well, at least they'll eat something that's good for you before they get into all the other stuff. And I still do that. If there's a great saying, you know, about what you should get kids for gifts, what is it? Something they want, something they need, something to wear, and something to read.
Love
if only we could stick to that, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. The other thing I was going to mention that, you know, the kids, when they compare things, Jackson came home and was talking about Elf on a Shelf, which is not happening in my house, right? But I'm like, Elf on a Shelf? He goes, yeah, a lot of kids at school have them. I go, aren't they like troublemakers? He goes, well, yeah, they do get into trouble. I'm like, do we really want a troublemaker in the house? I don't think we want
that. That's so smart.
Right? But it's like, but you know, I mean, I learned this from my brother who had Elf on the Shelf, and like, you know, you forget to do something with, you know, it's like, it's a big deal. So it's like, I don't need that pressure of Elf on the Shelf. But yeah, he seemed to be okay with that. we'd love to hear from listeners. You know, what do you do to spread joy in this season, or what's what do you find joyful? 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Another stress of the holidays will be the family interactions. And you know, as you all get together, it can be joyful, Jenny, as you're saying. Sometimes, you know, there's that one family member who always kind of creates a little stress in the.
I'm not saying we don't have that too.
Yeah.
We do have that too. You know, I think that you really just be kind to people. I mean, I really, really think that, well, so first of all, there's research that when you're kind to someone, when you do something for someone, your attachment grows, mm-hmm. right? So that increases connection, which brings people joy. Human beings, because as we've talked about many times before, evolutionarily, we need each other. And so our bodies are primed to have good experience when we're having a good experience with another person. So be kind to someone. They will, I guarantee you, soften if you're kind to them. Mm-hmm. I guarantee it.
Yeah. Another good way to spread joy is being kind to people you don't even know. We've talked about this
Absolutely.
Before. Just a smile, a compliment. You know, we don't know what people are going through right now in their personal lives. And they could be the one that is, you know, missing a loved one this holiday season, or doesn't feel like they have the money to, you know, do the things they want to do. There's a lot of stresses going around, and just something as simple as a kind word or a smile can make such a big difference in somebody's day.
And it bounces back and forth. So if you're feeling like, no one's kind to me, why am I fine? It bounces back. Yeah. You get someone to smile who's grumpy, that feels really good.
Yeah. Other thoughts on how we spread joy? Mark, what are some thoughts that we might concentrate on for spreading joy in the season?
Well, start with being mindful. Start with being, you know, in other words, aware of what you're feeling. See if there's something you can share with somebody that makes the connection stronger. So for instance, memories. You have a table full of fighters, perhaps. Hopefully they're not drinking. See if you can remember something from the past and discuss it. Mm. Or pick up something that somebody said and relate that to a memory that you had from them.
Everybody loves to be nostalgic, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Jonathan,
especially when it's meaningful to them. It can be.
Yeah. All right. Jonathan, what are your thoughts on that? What are you going to do to spread some joy?
Oh.
I put up holiday decorations early. That's what I did.
I try to. I think we'll move on to Jenny. Give me a couple more minutes
to
think about
Jenny.
I just really like that idea that Mark had of sharing a memory. I remember when, you know, I think I've shared before that my mother died when I was 4. And there was a period of time in my life when I felt like I didn't know her. And so I went around, I was interviewing all these people and getting all this information about her and writing it up. And all of that was great, but it didn't really flesh her out in this way for me. And then I talked to my sister. And I said, and I thought these memories were entirely apocryphal, right? Like just made up in my own brain, of her taking these little walnut shells, half a walnut shell, and a toothpick and turning them into little sailboats in the, and then you could buy these tiny little plastic babies, which, you know, you can't buy for 4-year-olds anymore, and put them in the shell and float them in the sink. And we would have our feet in the sink, floating these walnut shells. By the way, cheap, cheap.
Yeah.
She remembered it as well. And both of us just felt so happy in that moment of remembering this shared joyful experience with our mother. And so if you have those and you haven't shared them with a friend or a sibling, or like my friend Julie, when we were little, we weren't that little, we were in junior high. So we would, you guys know this game, we would lie on the couch and we'd stick our feet together and we'd try to push each other's feet farther back and forth. And she brought that up to me one day and I was like, oh my God,
I remember that. That's right.
I mean, it's just, there's something about shared memories that can just lighten you up.
Yeah, or memories that you, as you, this interviewing people about your mother, I learned so much about my father when he died by from some of his friends and some of their experiences. For each one, I felt like there was a side to my father I never saw or didn't know. Yeah. And it was like so interesting to put all of that together. So, you know, sharing and hearing those stories, especially of you know, loved ones that have passed on, is it's the same thing. You're like, I didn't know that, right? It's interesting little tidbits. All right, Jonathan, what are you going to do?
I think that, you know, for me, one of the ways that I, and I guess it's a little confusing because it also fills me with joy, but I think it brings joy to others, is doing things like, so Sally and I, you know, are involved with an organization here called Mercy Meals. And, you know, it's one of many places that will feed people on Christmas morning. And going and participating in that serving of food to people who have nothing, I'd like to think that it's one way to bring some pleasure, some, you know, I'm not sure if joy is quite the right word, but certainly some pleasure to people who have less than I. And for me, that's always, you know, being able to kind of chip in some way, you know, to me, it makes me feel about as good as I can feel, which probably sounds a little weird because as a psychiatrist, I guess that's kind of in a way what I try to do for a living is help people, you know, feel better about their circumstances. But to simply just serve breakfast to people is obviously a very different kind of activity. And, you know, I'm also on the board of, you know, a couple of nonprofits. And I, when I've asked, I always feel like, you know, I feel like my, I get more from the experience than what I give, because it really is such a fundamental feeling of joy for me to be able to be in a position where I can donate time, money, you know, whatever it is.
866.
I also agree with Jenny about sharing memories. That's one of the things that we do in our family is, you know, every family has its own specific memories of really goofy events that took place or odd occurrences. And in my family, certainly there are, you know, a few, and just sitting around and reminiscing on those times and it makes everybody laugh. And it's, and again, that feeling of connectedness of being part of a group larger than yourself, which after all is more difficult to achieve now than it was 50 years ago or 100 years ago, given that people move all to all parts of the country, all parts of the world, to be with members of your family or with very old friends and reminisce about old times is a very precious event.
For sure.
You're putting your finger on humor, which I think is important. That you can remember about and telling some jokes as long as they're quote unquote acceptable.
You bring up a good point, Mark, and I was just thinking humor, like I was saying, it burned the turkey. Well, how you react to that also can set the tone, right? I've told this story many times. This was a Thanksgiving story. My one of my brothers decided he was going to do that deep frying turkey thing, and they did it in the driveway, and it was, I guess, way too hot. That turkey was destroyed. And my sister-in-law, rather than be like, oh my God, what did it? She thought it was funny, and you know, they had lots of vegetables, and she cut out a picture of a turkey from a magazine and she put it in the center of the table, and they ate everything else. Now, you know, I think what you remember from that is how she reacted to the burned turkey, right? So sure. Yeah, a little humor.
Yeah. I want to say two things about this community thing. So you're talking about group activities towards a common goal, Jonathan, when you talk about doing, which is notoriously wonderful for our self-esteem and our mental health. However, there are people who don't have families, who don't have a hard time making friends, who feel alone. And then I think it's time to think about our own parts. So sometimes when I am feeling in a particular funk, I'm giving myself as an example, I can think about the part of me that's still that four-year-old girl, right? That little girl, or that part of me that's a teenager. And I try to spend time with those parts of myself as an adult, so that then you're still getting some of that. I know that sounds really weird and funky, but it's surprisingly relaxing because no one's judging you, and hopefully, and can be very generative in terms of creating joy and happiness. Because those younger parts of us are often the most joyful parts because they don't care about stuff or things or, you know, what other people think. They care about being loved.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after break. You're listening to The Point. We are discussing the holidays, which can be a joyous time for some, and for others, very stressful. With us is psychiatrist Mark Whaley, psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz, and social worker Jenny Putnam. 866-999-4626 is our number. Where do you find joy in the season? 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Eric in Sandwich writes, I find receiving random acts of kindness from strangers at this time of year to make me feel joy, so I make a point of doing that for others. Eric, thanks. That's I really think that's an important. I think we should be doing that year round, by the way, not just on the holidays. One of the things about those who really find this time of year their favorite and they're really into it, for 70% of those folks, it can be a big letdown when the new year rolls around. Right. So some who are feeling joy right now may not be feeling so joyful once January hits. And I think, you know, it's dark, it's cold. January and February, you know, you're just waiting for spring for some. What are your thoughts on, and then the bills come in, right? You maybe spent a little more than you meant to. Thoughts on how we preempt that feeling of like the blues, if you will, or a little bit depressed when January rolls around. They're all thinking, I can see it, yeah.
Have the adopt the attitude that it's just part of life and it's part of the life cycle, even the seasonal cycle.
Mark, move your mic a little closer again. You're a little bit soft. Yeah, there you go.
Think of it as you know, just basically something that's accepted in life, and also there's a little bit of advantage to the coldness and the darkness. It keeps you kind of centered and shut in a little bit, and a little bit you don't have to be out. It's nice if you have, you know, hopefully you have heat, you're not homeless, and just to be warm, cozy inside, and also nowadays we can watch movies.
Watch movies, yeah. You're having a little trouble with your mic this morning, I think. Maybe now you're too close. Jenny, what are your thoughts? I mean, I think that's a good point. I mean, a lot of people can't afford to go on like some, you know, tropical vacation to break up the winter, but you can watch movies, you can read books, as Mark said, you can kind of like cuddle in at home, right?
Yeah, the first thought I have is to get one of those lamps. Some of those UV rays, they're you know, I think they're affordable and they really do make a difference, especially if you start earlier than January. You have to start using them earlier. Accepting that, the ups and downs of life is another thing. And all of these things that we've been talking about anyway, smiling at people, being mindful, trying to stay in the moment, not be thinking about the future or that was over and now it's nothing, like trying to be really mindful that here I am at my desk with these lovely people talking about joy, you know, like you need to kind of stop. And it's really a practice. I mean, we've talked about this before, and I know that it's very, very hard. And we've talked about how we four are not great at it, practicing it, but all the time. But you need to just a couple minutes a day. You know, the journaling idea is great, gratitude journaling, kindness to strangers, kindness to your loved ones, kindness to yourself.
Yep.
You know, letting yourself feel your feels and then moving on.
One of the things I do in January and February is I read a lot of gardening stuff. Look at pictures of beautiful gardens in bloom. I start planning what I'm going to be putting in my garden. I actually, in the summertime, take little videos and pictures of my garden so that I can look at them in the wintertime. But if you're not a gardener, maybe that doesn't help you. But and sometimes I'll even go into you know one of the garden centers here just to see some plants, which is helpful for me. But I don't know if everybody, that's my tip. I don't know if it works for everybody else, but that always makes me feel better.
Yeah. And exercise always.
Oh, right. Oh yeah. Exercise. Good point.
Don't stop that.
Always. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Breathing and exercise does a lot for a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. What are your thoughts?
And on the Cape, it's a beautiful place to walk.
Yeah.
It's less cold than the mainland.
Yeah.
Generally.
And there's lots of trails in the woods that are even warmer.
Yeah, I would say without the wind, yeah. Yeah. Pick a day that's not super windy. If it's sunny and it's not windy, if that sun feels pretty warm, I think.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Jonathan,
what are your thoughts?
You know, it's funny. I was just talking to a patient yesterday who lives on the Cape and who spends, every morning goes and sits on the beach, even at this time of year, and finds that it's a very calming, soothing, and perhaps joyous experience. Mm-hmm. My wife and I are very lucky. We have a house, our home is on an estuary, and every minute of every day is slightly different than every other's because the tide rises and falls. Sometimes the marsh is exposed. Most of the time it's partially exposed. The colors change from season to season. And I can literally sit in my living room or out on the deck on the other side of the glass wall. And it's amazing how quickly I feel content.
It's like a meditation.
I feel like I'm living in a national park. It's really awesome.
Very lucky.
That's terrific.
Mark, what do you do to get through January and February?
Everything that's been said, I do keep up exercise. That's really important for me on a daily basis. Some reading watch Netflix. I like it. Watching, say, Forrest Gump or something. It just lifts your spirit when you're in a movie that is really engaging.
That list of movies, Mark, that is in the gave to all of us, that is sort of all recommended. Perhaps there's a way to post that online on the website, Mindy, so that people who want to access it can, because there's lots and lots of great movies that one might not think of, but which can really bring a smile to one's face.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, it's sort of reminding us. Yeah, because sometimes you go, all right, what am I going to watch? And it can be so overwhelming because there's so much out there. You're like, oh, you know, how do I even weed through all of this? I think also, too, that's true sometimes for books. You're like, okay, what do I want to read? And suggestions for friends. And I think every bookstore, there's always the picks, right? The employees' picks. And I think you go up to any librarian and you say, hey, I like books about, you know, X, Y, or Z. They are going to find something that you're going to enjoy reading. And maybe it's a time to kind of reach out and pick something in a genre you don't normally read and see how that goes. Right. One of the things we haven't talked about, and Mark, you just kind of touched on it a little bit, but is alcohol consumption and the office parties that might have alcohol. And, you know, all right, you're going to, you know, a relative's house and you're like, maybe I need a couple drinks before I get over there. We want to be mindful of that, right?
Absolutely, because alcohol is a depressant.
It depresses inhibitions, in other words, loosens inhibitions, and it invariably changes mood, and not always to the better, even though you can feel a sense at some point along the intoxication process, you feel a sense of a rush of pleasure, but that's very short lived, and certainly the next day it's bad, and certainly if you have one really red flag is if you don't remember what went on while you were drinking. That's a signal that you really need to pay attention to your drinking habits, because that means that you've poisoned your brain, at least temporarily, because it couldn't record memories. And then also, I don't know how many trauma stories I've heard of drinking at Christmas time and the violence that comes up. And how, you know, how painful that is.
Pat in West Tisbury has some ideas here for Joy. Music, she says, sing it, perform it, listen to it in your car radio, in church, a community sing, or fancy concert hall, anything from Handel's Messiah, The Holly Jolly Christmas. Sing the old beloved carols with your kids and grandkids. Sing them by yourself when nobody's home. This year, my 10-year-old granddaughter is playing the old familiar carols on the piano and teaching them to her 5-year-old brother. Music raises the spirits, and especially when we sing along. Pat, what a great reminder. Music is, I had an uncle who we would go over dinner, and it sounds as corny as could be, but he would sit down at the piano and he would play these old songs, and we would laugh because it was so corny, right? That we're all standing around this piano singing these crazy old songs, but it was so much fun, right?
There's a reason that every culture and every religion has singing. Well, I guess there's some that don't allow singing, but almost all have group singing, because there's something about that shared resonance that lifts us up or, brings us down, but still lifts us up because we feel the sadness together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And music can bring you back to a moment, right? It's like, that the song, I was hearing something on the way in this morning about the Billboard, top, they have the top 100 hits at the moment, and the top five are Christmas songs, and the same top five as last year. And it was, the Mariah Carey song, which, has been played to death. But I think Burl Ives was in there. Brenda Lee, Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree. I'm trying to remember what the other two were. But most of them, except for the other two were sort of newer songs. But Burl Ives and Brenda Lee still topping the charts.
there was a podcast I listened to a million years ago, so I don't know what it was, but it was talking about aging. So it had a number of different pieces, but one was that they took these people who were probably around what we all are now, and they who were starting to get pains in their knees and not functioning as well. They put them in this hotel where they had to carry their own luggage and go up and down the stairs, but they played the music from when they were in their 20s and 30s all the time, and these people got better.
And I
part of it was the physical, not expecting to be aged and decrepit, but part of it was this bringing you back
into the moment. All right, so we hopefully everybody will find a little joy in the season, even though it can be stressful. Psychiatrist Mark Whaley, psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz, and social worker Jenny Putnam, as always, thank you all for your thoughts. Appreciate it. Hope you have a happy holiday. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.